very cheerful hello from me. I'm Brian, and I want to welcome you to our third adventure and exploration into the vast forest called music. Forests are made up of individual trees. Individual trees are made up of roots, branches, and leaves. Music, similarly, is made up of individual songs or pieces, which in turn are made up of notes, beats, and colour. Today we're looking at that element colour, also called timbre or tone colour, quality of sound, tone, ring, or resonance. The piece of music you've been listening to was the first portion of Karl Orff's Carmina Burana, O Fortuna. You may have wondered if this was going to be an advertisement for a certain men's fragrance. In the minds of many people, the music and the fragrance are linked. This is the power of advertising and music working together to suggest an emotion to the listener. How does that work? In this piece, the combined full orchestra and two mixed choirs produce a very powerful sound that conveys the strength and control, even masculinity, that we suppose the fragrance has. Then we hear a contrast. This is the Latin lament about the role of fate in the destiny of man, an almost grumbling complaint, and then it explodes in protest. The powerful strokes on the kettle drum and the volume of sound inspire a feeling of awe and wonder. Now, as a complete contrast, but illustrating the same point, do you remember these pieces of music from 2 weeks ago and what we said about them? What we said then was that the contrast of these two movements comes from the use of contrasting instruments of the orchestra. I asked you to please listen for the high-pitched wind instruments, flute and oboe, and the high-pitched violins in the morning mood, and to contrast it to the very low-pitched wind instrument, the bassoon, and the use of the big, deep kettle drums in the Hall of the Mountain King. At that time, I was drawing your attention to the relative high and low notes, but high and low notes in the orchestra are played by different instruments, and each of those instruments has a unique sound or timbre. Imagine if I played all those notes on just one instrument, like, for example, the piano. While the music works, much of the colour is gone. It's like comparing a full-colour photograph to a sepia photograph. In fact, the pianist has to work very hard to not only play all those notes, but to make them convincing. So let's do a little comparison. I have to be very careful here, I'm whispering, because pianists will want to lynch me. I'm not suggesting the piano version is inferior, just that it's not what Grieg had in mind. Okay, so here's Morning Mood on the piano, a little bit of it, followed by a little of the orchestral version.
Thank you.
Did you identify the instruments I spoke about? The leader is the flute, followed by the oboe. Quite far along, the violins, first and second, and viola take over, but in their high register. Later, the horn and clarinet have something to say. But at all times, the texture or timbre is light, owing to the combination of the instrumentation and the high pitch. Now, let's listen to the next two movements from this suite of pieces. Take note that we are now minus all the wind instruments, and we are focusing on violins 1 and 2 and viola, but they are now no longer in their high register. They've transferred to the low register because we are no longer celebrating the new day, we are mourning the death of AZ. Now our third movement, the same combination of violin 1 and 2 with viola continues, but they're back in their high register again. And added is a triangle, which somehow, with very tiny little tings, manages to once again completely change the mood. Anitra's dance turns out to be a mazurka. Just a little additional piece of information. The morning mood was in two beats, the death of Aeza was in four, and this charming mazurka was in three beats. Now, the last piece in the Hall of the Mountain King is huge. Even my copy of the score is printed larger, and the instrumentation takes an entire page to list. It's a full orchestra. Two flutes, piccolo, oboe, clarinet, two bassoons, four horns, two trumpets, two trombones, bass trombone, tuba, two timpani tuned to B and F sharp, the big bass drum, cymbals, first and second violins, viola, cello, and double bass. That's a lot of instruments, so we can expect to hear a very big sound. in this big sound, we can identify quite a number of instruments, especially the low-pitched ones, but in general we're listening to a blended orchestral color, which is designed to sound heavy and somewhat scary. So let's think of timbre as the resonance or quality of tone by which our ears recognize and identify the distinctive sound of a particular voice or musical instrument. This is determined by a number of factors, including which instrument or voice is producing the sound, the method of sound production, the size and shape of the instrument or vocal tract, and the presence of overtones or harmonics in the sound. Some instruments have a very distinct and recognizable timbre, like the nasal twang of a banjo or the deep resonance of a cello. Other instruments, like synthesizers and electric guitars, can produce a very wide variety of timbres through the use of electronic processing and effects pedals. In addition to its role in distinguishing between different instruments, timbre is used to convey emotion, mood, and style in music. Remember, we said in the first program that music is an art form that expresses emotion and feeling through the medium of sound. So, for example, a bright, brassy trumpet sound might be used to evoke a sense of triumph and celebration. That's why you hear them at coronations or in the military, for example. Remember, we also heard them in our opening piece, O Fortuna, right at the end, bringing the piece to its climax. Here's a coronation anthem. It will be played at the coronation of King Charles III on the 8th of May. It was composed by George Frederick Handel and has been sung and played at every coronation of a British monarch since it was composed for King George II in 1727. It starts with organ and strings, but from about minute 1 and 30 seconds, the trumpets can be heard with other brass wind instruments. Please identify as you listen to this how the majestic sound of the strings, the massed choir, and the orchestra create an aura of pomp and circumstance, how the kettle drums support the majestic sections, and how the trumpets are the instruments that bring the brightness to the tone. This is especially in the final minute. You may notice many similarities to the O Fortuna we heard at the start. Thank you. Now, a different emotion, a dark, moody cello sound, which might be used to create a sense of melancholy or introspection. We're going to listen to the second movement of the Sonata for Cello and Piano by the Russian composer Sergei Rachmaninoff. This piece was composed in 1901. The second movement is especially dark and brooding. The cello begins with a melancholy melody played over a sparse, ominous accompaniment in the piano. As the movement progresses, the music becomes more intense and dramatic, with the cello playing long, soaring lines that convey a sense of longing and despair. The piano responds with rich, complex harmonies that help to create a sense of depth and complexity. Now, all these words I'm using, dark, brooding, melancholy, intense, dramatic, longing, despair, depth, complexity, you're probably thinking this must be quite some music. It is. Listen for yourself. See if you can identify these emotions I've just mentioned, but using only the tone color of the instruments to help you.
Thank you.
Now, for a contrast, I'm going to repeat a piece you heard in program one. The same two instruments will be playing, a cello and a piano, but what is the mood this time?
Thank you.
course, this time the mood is romantic, completely different, same instruments, isn't it amazing? Timbre is also used in combination with other musical elements such as harmony, melody and rhythm to create a specific emotional or stylistic effect. Let's look at a bright, cheerful, high-pitched melody played on a flute combined with a bouncy, syncopated rhythm on the piano. In this movement, marked presto giocoso, in other words, quick and joyful, the flute plays the lively, upbeat melody, full of character and personality. The melody is playful and light-hearted with lots of leaps and jumps, gives it energy and movement. The accompaniment played on the piano is equally lively and upbeat with a syncopated rhythm that adds to the overall playfulness and whimsy. The overall effect is one of joy, with the bright, cheerful timbre of the flute and the bouncy syncopated rhythms creating the sense of lightheartedness and fun. Overall, the use of timbre in music is a complex and nuanced art form. It requires careful attention to the unique characteristics and capabilities of each instrument, as well as an understanding of the emotional and stylistic effects that can be achieved through the use of different timbres. This is a large part of the skill of the gifted composer. In fact, this is what separates the genius from the workman in composition. Let's take a short break from timbre because I want to come back to the questions I raised last week, which I asked you to do some further research about. I hope you looked at the Beethoven Symphony and that interesting clock face rhythm, but I'm not going to talk about them right now. I'm going to talk about where I asked you what was the reason for the prominence of a drum set and drummer in almost all popular music, and I said, hint, think about why the drum set consists of different sizes of drums. The reason is that rhythm is often the most vital part of popular music, and the drum kit is a very simple way of keeping the beat at the forefront. It is, so to speak, the glue that holds the performance together. And what about the different sizes of those drums? In program one, I also mentioned that the different sizes produce different low or high pitched sounds. So by having different sizes of drums, the drummer is able to give much more than just a rhythm. The rhythm has a melodic aspect to it that helps us to identify the strong and weak pulses of the different 2 or 3 or 4 beat patterns. This is especially vital for dance music. So my next question was then, how can you explain that classical music does not rely heavily on the presence of drums in the orchestra? And the answer is a relatively simple answer. The orchestra uses other instruments to supply the rhythm, particularly the bass instruments, sometimes in combination with the large copper kettle drums. The next question was, what function does that alternating bass serve? We spoke about that last week. We heard it in several pieces, how the orchestra or the piano uses alternating low and higher bass notes to keep the music and the beat flowing. These serve exactly the same function as the large and small drums in the drum kit, namely to help us to identify the strong and weak pulses in the rhythm and to identify if the music is in 2 beats, 3 beats, or 4. I also asked you to read up about the timpani, those very large kettle drums seen in the orchestra. They have special uses besides keeping the beat. There are usually 3 of them of different sizes, and these drums are tuned to specific notes. You may recall hearing the very first note of O Fortuna. They are powerful and dramatic. They often produce the notes for that alternating bass pattern. One very interesting feature is that these drums can be tuned to different notes, and if you watch very carefully during an orchestral performance, you may spot the timpanist with his ear practically touching the head of the drum while he tunes it to the notes required for the next part of the music. So, how about a little further research for this week? First, I'd like you to listen to the entire Carmina Burana and read up a little about it. I would like you to especially take note of how Karl Orff uses the colors of the instruments in the orchestra to make the music as colorful as the colors of the rainbow or the pride flag. This is truly an astonishing composition, if you don't already know it, but because it's quite long, it's best if you have a list of the songs to identify where you are in the piece. Second, can you think of some terms we might use to expand the concept of timbre? And third, some words we might use to describe the timbre of a particular piece of music. To wrap up our program this week, I've got 2 short pieces. One for orchestra and then the same piece on the piano. In my opinion, this is the opposite circumstance to that of the Grieg piece we heard earlier. Grieg wrote his music for orchestra and the piano version is an arrangement. In this case, the piece was written for piano. The orchestra version is the arrangement. The piece we will hear is the movement entitled Tuileries from the Pictures at an Exhibition by Modest Mussorgsky. Mussorgsky wrote this for piano, even although he was a master of orchestration, as evidenced by his composition Night on a Bald Mountain. And yet no shortage of other composers and arrangers thought they could do it better by arranging it for orchestra. The most famous of these is the one by Ravel, which we'll listen to first. As colorful and bright as it is too heavy. It misses the playful lightness of the painting of the children, who are playing and teasing each other in that famous Parisian garden. The piano successfully captures this playful lightness. However, many of you would disagree with me, so judge this for yourself. Here's first the orchestral and then the original for piano. What was your decision? Whichever it was, either way, you have experienced how tone, color, or timbre can change the character of the music. So that's our music for today. Goodbye for now, and thank you for joining me. I do hope you will join me again next week as we chat about the fourth of the fundamental characteristics of a sound, namely volume. Goodbye for now.